This is Colchonero Chat, the only weekly English language podcast dedicated to Atletico Madrid and the official podcast of Into the Calderon, the SB Nation home for all things Atletico. I'm Jeremy Barron, my guest on this edition of Colchonero Chat, making his standard Monday appearance on the program, is Into the Calderon staff writer and noted Azerbaijan expert Rob Walker. Rob Walker is the guest on this edition of Colchonero Chat, in which we break down Atletico's 1-1 draw with Barcelona on Saturday at the Wanda Metropolitano. A story of two halves, Atleti clearly the better side in the first half, despite just shading 30% possession, and even for a stretch in the second half. But in the end, Barcelona's smart substitutions and Luis Suarez's head securing a draw for the Catalans. We'll analyze what changed at halftime for Atletico, how and why Diego Simeone got his substitutions so wrong, whether or not it was a good point for Atletico, and we ask, is Saúl Ñíguez now Atleti's most important player? After that, we turn to Rob for analysis of Atletico's trip to Azerbaijan. On Wednesday, they'll face Karabag in the Champions League, a critical game if Atleti wish to qualify for the knockout stages of that competition. Simeone's squad list is out. We'll talk about who may be in, who may be out of the starting 11, and more. Before we proceed, subscribe and listen to Colchonero Chat on your favorite podcasting platform, whether that is iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, Google Play, or TuneIn. Make sure to leave a rating and review on iTunes. Really helps the program's visibility, gets more eyes and ears on it. And also, head over to patreon.com/colchonerochat if you wish to learn more about contributing to the show. For a small fee every month, you can get exclusive content, including early access to select episodes of Colchonero Chat, behind-the-scenes photo and video of the podcasting process, and so much more. Patreon.com/ColChinerochat is the place to be for all of that. Again, Patreon.com/ColChinerochat. We'll be right back with Rob Walker after this. One of my notes is just in all caps, winning like this does not work.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very interesting game. I kind of actually didn't feel too nervous about it going into halftime, even though they've been kind of bossed in possession and shots and stuff. But I don't know, I still kind of thought that they were hanging into it, but then in the second half they kind of lost control a bit.
Yeah, they burrowed underground like a mole, but we'll talk about all that. In the meantime, let's do our whip around.
Woohoo!
Yes, 8 weeks, 98% in the books. Celta Vigo and Las Palmas are still to play today on this fine Monday afternoon, or Monday night in Spain. Let's take it back to Friday when Espanyol and Levante played out a goalless draw, a standard result for those two sides. On Saturday, Athletic notching a pretty big win over Sevilla at San Mamés, 1-0. A very nice win for Athletic. Getafe 1, Real Madrid 2. Real Madrid unconvincing. Real Madrid still pick up all 3 points. Alaves 0, Real Sociedad 2. Two late goals from La Real. Mikel Oyarzabal scoring what turned out to be the winning goal. Love that kid so much.
Yeah, they look good.
Yeah. Remember. Yeah, they are up to seventh now. On Sunday, Eibar and Depor playing out a goalless draw. Eibar have scored just 3 goals through 8 weeks. That's not good.
That's pretty poor.
Yeah, and even Atletico are scoring more than that.
Not saying something.
Girona won, Villarreal 2. Cedric Bakambu scoring a brace. He's got like 5 goals in the last 2 weeks. That's pretty good.
Yeah, he's been really good this year.
Yeah.
Very good.
Malaga 0, Leganés 2. Story of two sides here. Story of two very different trajectories. Malaga's nightmare continues. They still have not won. They've picked up just 1 point from 8 games. Leganés, meanwhile, are in a Europa League place. They've conceded the fewest goals in La Liga.
Yeah, they're off to an immense start. Now
amazing.
That draw with them, that 0-0 draw with them, starting to look a little bit better.
Yeah, they're unbeaten in their last four. I mean, they haven't really played any of the big teams yet other than Atletico, but got to give them credit where it's due.
Big time. To immense be up that start. High on the table above Real Sociedad and Villarreal this early, I mean, that's a big step for them.
And Athletic and Celta. It's pretty impressive. And Eibar. All teams
are
in the top
half. Yeah,
they've
kind of taken advantages of some teams kind of falling down a little bit, and they've capitalized, so fair play to them.
Yeah. And finally, the game of the weekend, which of course involved Betis and Valencia. Real Betis 3, Valencia 6, 3-6 Mafia.
Madness. Absolute man.
Yeah, the goals.
At one point, I mean, yeah, the 6-3 kind of makes it sound less competitive than it was. Because Betis pulled it back to what, 3-4?
It was 4-0, like, and then, it's funny, Gabriel came on. He was a defensive substitute from Marcelino. Betis then ripped off 3 goals in about 4 minutes as soon as Gabriel came on. The poor guy just can't get a break.
Well, his year is going to get even worse when Diego Costa can play, because as people may remember, they didn't get on so well when Chelsea and Arsenal played each other.
The epic rematch. I actually can't wait for that now that you mention it.
That's going to be something. They may ship 3 goals again with
him. But no, the goals scored in this game were just absolutely incredible. And Valencia, they're up to second, one of just 3 unbeaten sides with Barcelona and Atletico, who we'll talk about in just a minute. I mean, they're just incredible. They are definitely top 4 material. And you could argue even top 3, the way they're playing.
They're scoring for fun at this moment in time. I don't know if they can keep that up. I don't know if they're a team like Monaco were last year, where they just scored an unbelievable amount of goals all year.
And just carries them throughout. I mean, they might be.
They might be, but I don't know. I kind of feel like they have some good young players, like Gonzalo Guedes. I think he's pretty good. But I don't, even though he's off to a hot start, I'm still not a believer in Simeone Zaza. The penalty will live on in my mind forever.
It will in mine too, but you can't escape the numbers. You can't escape the numbers, Rob.
Yeah.
Since September 9, Atletico have scored 6 goals. Simone Zaza has scored 6 goals.
He's hit the ground running in La Liga. It's suited him quite well. I mean, he scored some important goals for Juventus too. So, you know, I accept this possible. He could actually be good. It's definitely possible.
Now, the one result we did not talk about in this whip around. Atletico Madrid 1. Barcelona 1. That is, again, Atletico 1. Barcelona 1. As you mentioned at the outset, Rob, interesting game. I mentioned during my Facebook Live halftime analysis on Saturday that you can't ever really be comfortable with 30% possession, but that's what Atletico were in the first half. Agreed?
Yeah, absolutely.
It was very strange.
I think even though they had such little possession, I think they did a lot more with the possession they did have than Barca did in that first half.
So what happened between the first half and the second half? Because after about the hour mark, Barcelona were clearly superior.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Barcelona, you know, they're one of those teams that when they kick it up a gear, you're going to definitely notice. And I think they did that. I think Messi, is, as usual, was amazing. And I think Luis Suarez, this was probably one of his best games of the season so far. He hasn't been great, but yeah, he was just an absolute danger.
Yeah, his final about 25-30 minutes, when, of course, he, including the equalizing goal in that, he was just an absolute monster.
Yeah, they couldn't contain him. I mean, the center back partnership, I think, from the start looked fine, but then kind of after the half, I think it kind of started to show the cracks of having 3 very, very slow defenders in your back line.
Geez, it's almost like it's not tenable to start Godin, Savage, and Juanfran all together. Who knew?
It didn't really make sense to me that he has 2 center backs on the bench that are both quite a lot faster
and they didn't
than
any
of their other options.
And they didn't play. I mean, Savage, yeah, we'll talk about Savage in a second as we talk about individual performances, but Savage I thought was really good, to be fair.
Yeah.
He played really well. But this is one of the issues I have with this game, was you're starting... Even Versalico is faster, and Versalico wasn't even in the team.
And yet he played on international duty.
And he played on international duty, and he's going to play in Azerbaijan on Wednesday. So, I mean, it's just, again, Simeone trying to feel out his squad and feeling out this rotation game, and just more hiccups in the rotation game, and more hiccups in picking a team that can pick up more than 1 point. I mean, Atletico now have as many wins as draws.
Yeah, the draws are concerning, because if you get way too many draws, I mean, it's not that much better than losing. So, it's concerning. But, you know, I get why he did it, and I think it kind of worked for a time. But then I think he maybe should have said, when it came time for the substitutions, all right, we need a little bit more pace in the back, because
the substitutions,
they got run ragged.
Oh, don't even get me started on the substitutions. Valverde clearly bossed him here. He brought on Sergio Roberto and De La Feu about on the hour mark, and that changed the game. Barcelona played with a lot more velocity. They played with a lot more pace. Really pinned back Felipe Luis. and really were able to get better and better chances as they were able to probe more. Atletico just kind of burrowed into the ground and just stopped attacking, and that is always when Atletico get into trouble against Barcelona, Real Madrid, those other big teams, is when they'd fall in love with defending, and that's what they did.
Yeah, they kind of just decided to see if they could hold out, grind out that 1-0 draw. And, you know, when they play this way, having such little possession and just kind of giving the other team the ball, you kind of have to accept that sometime or later you're going to get bit by it. And Atleti have quite a few times.
Quite a few times. And the plan hasn't really changed.
Yeah, exactly. And it's frustrating. But, you know, when it works out, it's fantastic. But, you know, I think when you're playing a team like Barcelona, you have to be a little bit smarter with the players that you bring on.
Yeah, so Valverde brought on De La Feo and Sergio Roberto. Sergio Roberto, of course, providing the assist on Luis Suarez's goal. Cholo brings on Nico Gaitán.
That was one of the weird ones.
I
didn't get that at all.
Can I blame him single-handedly for this draw, or is that not fair?
I mean, genuinely, I saw someone tweet about this. It was like, in the second half, I don't remember him ever having possession at all.
Yeah.
I can't really think back to a time where he did anything of meaning.
I did the player ratings. I didn't give him a rating.
I think that's probably fair.
He played 33 minutes. I couldn't give him a rating. I mean, he lost track of Sergio Roberto in the build-up, just kind of lazily jogged after him and gave him all this space with Felipe burrowed into his own box. And he just has no chemistry with anyone in attack. At one point, this is the one thing I'll remember from this game about Gaitán, and probably sums up his time at Atletico Madrid. Griezmann aimed for him on the left wing. The pass rolled off his back and away from him. That is Nico Gaitán's time at Atletico in a nutshell.
Yeah, that is pretty bad.
He's not good. And I don't understand what Simeone was doing with this substitute. And he's not an attacking threat. He's certainly not going to help you defensively. What was he thinking?
Yeah, I don't know what he thought that was going to do by bringing him on. I mean, I think he would have gotten a lot more from having Correa. But he was not the Atletico substitute with the least amount of touches. Would you care to guess or hazard a guess at who that might be?
Fernando Torres.
Correct.
Hey.
With four whole touches.
Well, hey, don't be slandering Torres, or a Torres guy might come back in the comments and rip you a new one. But
hey, I understand some people love Fernando Torres. He's just old. He's old. You have to accept it.
It's actually funny about Torres. He played 7 minutes, and he won two aerial duels. Atletico as a team won 3.
Well, there you go. That's what he brings.
They had won one aerial duel in 82 minutes before Torres came on.
That doesn't sound too good, does it?
Yeah, so that segues into another question for you, Rob. Our good friend of the pod, Ewan McTeer, wrote a column in Marca English about Atletico's struggles with winning the ball in the air. 5 of Atleti's 7 goals conceded in La Liga this season have come off headers. They only won 16% of aerial duels against Barcelona. What's the problem? Why can't Atletico win the ball in the air anymore?
It's a weird one, isn't it? Because you think the defenders that played against Barcelona are pretty strong defenders. I mean, none of them are giants. Savage is a pretty big dude, and Godin certainly puts himself about, but to be losing that many headers is quite concerning. I mean, perhaps part of it is that some of them are aging out and they're kind of lost a little bit of athleticism. But, I mean, I think, you know, some of those two younger center backs, I think, may give you a little bit more in the heading department. I think Jose Jimenez and Lucas both have their qualities when heading the ball defensively.
Yeah, especially at the back, it's weird because Godin has made, like, a living out of winning the ball in the air, right?
Yeah,
I mean, some of his most famous moments have come because he has just brutalized opposing players in the air. He won 0 aerial duels against Barcelona. He got nothing against Umtiti and Piqué.
It's crazy to me.
It's really weird.
It doesn't even make sense.
I mean, it makes a little more sense to me as you go through midfield, especially through the forward line, because Atleti are fielding smaller, quicker players on their forward line. And Fernando Torres won 2 of those aerial duels. Griezmann won the other. So you're getting nothing in the air from your back four or your midfield four.
Yeah. I wonder, I mean, Barcelona aren't necessarily a team that chucks the ball into the box, like trying to win a bunch of headers, but even still, you'd imagine the number would be higher than that.
yeah, it was shocking to me when I looked at the numbers and saw just how well Barcelona did in the air. And it was a contributing factor, because when you don't win the ball in the air, when you can't settle the ball down like that, it inhibits your attacking play, your long ball game, it inhibits your long ball game, correcting myself, both when you go forward and when you're trying to defend it.
Right, exactly. And that second half, it was totally crazy how much the defense looked like they'd fallen off a little bit. And just in that last part of the game, I really do think that three of them at least lost a bit of pace, and that just totally ruined them against that forward line.
You think it's a point gained or 2 points lost?
It doesn't feel too bad, because it is Barcelona, and this is the first time they've dropped points all season. So from that perspective, it doesn't feel that bad, but you kind of get the feeling that they could have had, if they had had a better second half, they could have gotten out of this with 3 points.
Yeah, you really do. And Atleti still have not beaten Barca in La Liga since 2010. It's a long time, and there have been several close shaves since then. But just cannot beat them. You just cannot beat them.
And, I mean, they really have been close a lot of times. I think, was it the Copa del Rey quarter or semifinals?
It was the semifinals last year when the 1-1 at Camp Nou in the second leg. And just all these 2-1 losses just piled up on top of each other the last couple of years, where any of those really could have been an Atletico victory.
It's really true. But Barcelona, at a certain point, they're so deadly on the attacking end. You kind of just have to take it sometimes, as bad as it feels. I mean, even without Neymar, you have Luis Suarez and Lionel Messi up front. I think he'll be all right.
Yeah, I mean, and Messi didn't really even get into this game until the second half.
Right.
But still, there was one time where I think it was Godin. I think he cleared the ball straight to Messi, like inside, like 15 yards. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Do you know who that is? And I thought for sure it was going to be a goal. Messi hit the woodwork twice. Came very, very close on a free kick that had Oblak beat, that he just rung off the outside of the post. I mean, then he had another free kick at the very end of stoppage time that I thought for sure was going to be a goal, because that's just how Messi rolls, and it went straight to Oblak to secure the draw.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. Oh, who was it that gave away the foul for that free kick?
Griezmann.
Was it Griezmann?
It was Griezmann.
Yeah.
Yeah, Griezmann had lost the ball, and in his fervor to win it back, had fouled Messi about 2 yards from being a penalty.
Yeah,
not too
I guess
smart.
That's what they call a striker's challenge.
yes, indeed. Yeah, not too
but,
smart.
Yeah, that was kind of brainless. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why he did that. I mean, I guess another positive from this game is we got to see a very lovely goal.
Oh, yes. Yes, we did, as part of that incredible first half. But I thought they were really, really good in the first half. Saul scoring a patented Saulazo.
It's becoming a thing. The big games, you're just starting to expect it now.
You just do. And this is now an interesting question that I'm going to pose to you. I've already posed it to the Into the Calderon Twitter followers. Is Saúl Ñíguez now Atletico's most important player?
I think so, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, he has the most influence on the team. I mean, he may not be the best player in the team, but I think in terms of influence, because Gabby's kind of waned a bit physically and hasn't played all the time. Griezmann's been a bit slow, and just no one else has really taken over, but he's kind of put his stamp on this team, and I don't think anytime soon he's going to be in any danger of losing a starting spot, even if it's at left back.
Even if it's at left back. I mean, he's just an incredible footballer, and this goal was just a peach. Just short passing outside the box, very progressive, very disciplined, very purposeful, I think is the word I'm looking for. Very purposeful build-up that Saul takes a step to the right and just curls this thing in past Ter Stegen. It was gorgeous. What a way to score your first goal of the season. First goal at the new stadium.
You're right to point out that build-up, because the build-up to that goal was fantastic. I mean, a team goal like that isn't super common for Atletico, but to score one like that, it was really nice. And, you know, he's with his right foot, which isn't his strong foot, but he is sort of a both-footed player.
I mean, he does everything.
Those kind of guys are rare.
Like, he can score these outrageous goals. He can play really just about anywhere on the pitch. I mean, I don't think it's a stretch to say he is Atleti's most important player. And 72% of respondents agree with you that he is Atleti's most important player.
I mean, if you watch the Atleti games, you'll see that he has such a big influence on the game, both going forward and defending, because he is so disciplined going back. I mean, we saw that in Spain when he was playing the U21s this summer. I mean, he was always tracking back, and, you know, some of the other players were kind of slouched halfway up the pitch, but, I mean, he always gives everything, which you gotta love about him.
I still think Griezmann is the most important player, but not because of anything Saul does or doesn't do. It's just the way the tactics are set up. It's the way Simeone sets up his team, the way Atletico's attack works, is that it collapses onto itself without Griezmann. And his role in the team is very, very messified. Doesn't always work because Griezmann at times has to play three different positions. He has to be a 7, a 9, and a 10. And he can't always do that because he's one player. So from that standpoint, I think Griezmann still is Atleti's most important player. But Saul's potential is limitless. We've said it before. We're going to say it again.
I think Griezmann's very important in the offensive sense of the team because outside of him, there aren't really any strikers or even really forward players except for maybe Carrasco that you consider to be ultra dangerous in Atleti's team at the moment.
Correa sometimes,
but that's kind of a new development, so we don't know if that's for real yet.
Right.
But I think in that sense he is very important because you do have to score goals to win games and win trophies. But, you know, I think in terms of the overall team, I think Saul's going to be that guy that kind of glues everything together.
And I think there are times when he plays too defensively, when Simeone plays him too deep, sometimes as a fifth center back. But he was incredible on both ends in this game. Led the team with 5 tackles. He seemed to be everywhere. I did the player ratings, and I thought he was kind of like a tornado. You know, he was everywhere. So, I mean,
he covered a ton of ground.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of touches as well.
His heat map was insane. You can absolutely make the argument he is Atleti's most important player now. Because when he scores, Atleti have never lost.
Yeah, and it's really crucial for teams to find a replacement for kind of a long-standing midfield player like Atleti have with Gabby, who, you know, has been amazing for several years now. But you kind of have to pass that on sort of well because, you know, you see teams all the time that don't have that, you know, ceremonial or, like, you know, whatever, the amazing central midfielder. When they lose that guy, they kind of fall to pieces. So it's good that a replacement was found early.
I can't remember what I was going to say next. Oh, okay. So, Stefan Savic, mentioned him earlier. Awesome performance, I thought, just in the first half particularly. Second half, not as great. He only completed 56% of his passes, which is very bad. And he probably should have been punished for a handball in the box in the second half. But that said, he was still very good. Do you think the center back competition is reopened, first of all? And second of all, is that necessarily a good thing?
I do think it is a good thing. It's probably the most competitive position, maybe outside of central midfield, at Atleti at the moment, because, you know, you have Godin, who's probably always going to start in a big game, but then you have 3 guys who are competing for one spot. So, you know, I don't think that can hurt the team. I think it'll push the young players to be better. Savage obviously is kind of playing to stay at the highest level, so they all have something to try and perform for. Clearly Simeone loves Savage. I don't particularly get why. He was good this game, but I might want to trust one of the younger guys, see what they can do.
Yeah,
know what Savage is going to do for you at this point.
That's kind of why I'm not sure it's a good thing. I mean, I'm happy that 21 Savage played well. He was very important in this game. I gave him an 8 in my ratings. But Jimenez and Lucas didn't see the pitch, and they need to, because I think that they're better. I think that they fit better with Godin. I think that they have more potential. They can do more things. Jimenez can play right back if needed. He might play there on Wednesday. We'll get to that in a minute here. Lucas can play at left back. Lucas is tremendously disciplined, positionally, really intelligent player. Jimenez is a bit of a wild card.
Not like
sometimes
that.
Sometimes, yeah, he's a bit of like a Charlie Kelly wild card. But
yeah, he does his own thing.
The things that he can do are just incredible. as we've seen, he is capable of doing some absolutely wonderful things. By the way, he still has not renewed his contract. So
still waiting on that.
Still waiting. Even though he's got his plaque on the Walk of Legends for 100 appearances, he doesn't have a new contract.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think performances like this one for Savage kind of muddy up the waters. And I think it's not, it's honestly not a great thing for the two other center backs who I think are better than Savage.
Yeah, the thing about it is, you know, I would rather Savage be playing well than, like, garbage.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
If Jimenez gets injured, then, you know.
Then you don't really have anyone.
He is wanted. He will do that.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, it's good to have a backup who's in some kind of form. I mean, we've kind of seen with Savage that he seems like one of those guys that if he has a really stinking performance, his confidence is going to take a hit for a little bit of time. I think we saw that at times last season. So, you know, I'm glad he's doing well, but I would rather see Lucas or Hosemar. I don't particularly care which. I think you just got to give the young guys minutes. I would have rather seen Hosemar right back, to be honest. Just do it, you know. See what he can do as compared to Juan Fran. I don't think he was great again. I mean, clearly the problems are there with him. So he might as well try something else.
This is a decent performance for him, I thought. Really, really energetic, really up for it, but you could tell he got tired as the game moved along, and you could tell that Simeone didn't really consider anyone else capable of playing right back. Jimenez can play right back, Simeone. You know this. Verselico can play right back. You know this. Why didn't you bring him into the team? Deep breaths. Deep breaths. Breathe in, breathe out.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I was just going to say, I mean, is he tired in that match? I mean, when you have the kind of players that they had, you had De La Feu that came off the bench as well. I mean, these are the kind of guys that can run one front ragged at this age.
So, yeah, he matched up with Jordi Alba, and Jordi Alba is really fast. Jordi Alba wasn't very good, but he's really fast, and that, you know, over 60, 70, 80 minutes can take a toll.
Jordi Alba has been really fast for a long time. That has been his main attribute. So.
Yeah, he's been really fast. He doesn't really do a whole lot else but be fast.
Yeah, he really hasn't pushed on as much as people thought he was going to back when they won the treble. I was like, oh God, all hail Jordi Alba. But yeah,
I mean, he's fine. He completed 88% of his passes in this game, 3 key passes. He wasn't very good. I think Juan Fran kept him in his pocket for a lot of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather have Felipe Luis myself, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
He's the man. He also played very well, I think, as usual.
Andre Gomez was a surprise starter for Barcelona. He looked laughably poor in the first half.
Let's do it.
you're ready for this one.
Yes, I am.
He was laughably poor in the first half. Then they moved him centrally. Valverde moved him centrally in the second half, and he was much better. Nearly created a goal. I would have been very sad, because he's not very good.
No, he is not very good. He did almost, I think, kind of with Iniesta and Rakitic both being subbed, I think it kind of opened up a big kind of vein of space for him to make chances in, and I think that worked out, because you have De La Feu, who's kind of more of a wing player, and Paulinho's in there as well, but he's clearly more of a defender, so I think it kind of gave Gomez a few more angles going forward than he would have had in the first half.
Yeah, I saw someone say that this game was crying out for Paulinho, and we couldn't imagine saying this 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, Paulinho. It's very true. He only played 12 minutes. Only played 12 minutes, thank God.
Yeah, he's a steam train.
A little bit.
Yeah, he's not looking too bad. I mean, the thing is, the 3 subs that Barcelona brought on all had a lot to play for. And I don't know, I kind of feel like that made a bit of a difference for them, because Roberto is trying to get a spot over Semedo at this point, and then De La Feu is trying for the seemingly millionth time to win a spot at Barcelona. And then, of course, Paulinho has his whole thing. And I don't know, I think Gaetan and Fernando Torres, I don't think, were as inspired as they were, perhaps.
I think Semedo has to be starting it right back for them. Just the Thunderbolt is the only reason why.
Yeah, I thought he was good. I was kind of surprised they took him off, but
I mean, he's got that Thunderbolt in his hair.
He does.
You saw
he
that
does.
Design.
He's also quite fast.
Yeah, his hair alone has to keep him in the team. His haircut alone has to keep him in there.
We'll see what Valverde thinks about, see how much he rates hair.
Yeah, last thing, actually two more things before we move on to Carabag on Wednesday. I expected Tomas to start this game. I think he would have been a much better fit in central midfield than Gabby. With the way Tomas can win the ball, his activity level, his work rate, his ability to start counterattacks, Simeone thought differently. Yeah, I felt pretty confident that Tomas was going to start this game, but he didn't.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. I mean, he had been in a little bit of a dip in form prior to the international break, but yeah, I still think he might have given you a little bit more in the midfield, definitely a lot more energy than Gabby or even maybe Koke. You could probably play Tomas on the wing and he wouldn't be atrocious, but, you know, I think he's a player that needs to get more game time. He was obviously started out being quite strong, and I think he'll probably play 90 minutes or so against Carabag, but, you know, he might have given us more, but no sense in worrying about it at this point. I mean, the subs were all kind of bad, so...
Yeah.
kind of low expectations.
He was the best of a bad bunch in this case.
Yeah, probably so.
And lastly, Kevin Gamero watch continues. He did not play again.
But he was on the bench.
He was on the bench.
He could have played.
He was on the bench. Looked comfortable on the bench. That's important, I suppose.
He was chilling. He was fine.
Yeah, he...
Didn't get to play, though.
He's got to play. He's got to play. All right, so that will...
Will he play against Carabag?
That is an excellent segue.
Great quandary.
All right. So, Rob, you are a noted Azerbaijan expert. So we're going to turn to you for some expert analysis. Some top-notch analysis, I'm expecting, of Carabag. Fire away.
Right. So, Carabag are a team that are in Azerbaijan.
Correct. We've established this. This is like Bart Simpson's report on Libya. Right now.
Yeah, exactly. They lost to Chelsea.
They did.
Really bad. So I have the sneaking suspicion that they might be bad. The Azerbaijani League was founded 25 years ago. Carabag, they're on top. They have 19 points and a game in hand. So there you go.
There's
my report to you.
That's super.
It took me all that time to find their league's website. Yes, it really did.
Well, thank you, Rob. That's exactly what I was hoping for.
They have 8 teams in their league.
Do they really? I actually didn't know that.
Yeah.
I know.
That's really weird.
I know next to nothing about the Azerbaijani league. I must say, I'm just not an expert on, you know, ex Eastern Bloc football leagues.
Yeah, I can't blame you. You know, even though they had the Baku games and the Land of Fire, all that, don't know that much about them. Still don't. I don't know how to pronounce many of their team names in the league. Kind of confused.
They were victorious over Inter Baku on what day was it? It was Friday, right? Yeah, they were victorious over Inter, except Inter Baku, 2-0 on Friday. So a pretty good warm up for them ahead of Atleti's visit. Of course.
There was a Mauro Icardi hat trick in that game, right?
Yeah, that's the one.
Right. I remember that. I watched part of that one.
Yeah, you are on top of it. You are on it. Of course, they also got trucked by Chelsea to open the group stage 6-0, and then they lost 2-1 at home to Roma. And all told, not a horrible performance, but Roma were up 2-0 inside 15 minutes and pretty much just chilled after that.
Yeah. Would you say this is a must-win game?
Yes. Atleti have to win this if they have any ambition of getting past the group stage, which they do, but if they want to see those ambitions, I guess, come to fruition, they must win this game. A draw will not cut it. Like, you
is
can't...
it a must-win big game where you have to score a ton of goals like Chelsea did against this poor little team?
Poor little team. Just win. Atleti aren't going to catch Chelsea, not least of which for goal difference, because Atleti don't really beat up on teams in the Champions League. I think the last multi-goal win, it was against Leverkusen last year, but before that, I think you have to go all the way back to Astana 2 years ago when they won 4-0 at the Calderon.
You know, I think if it was possible for it to go to penalties, I think Simeone would play to get it to penalties.
Yes, he very well might.
It's the game plan. It always works.
But you just got to win. I mean, last year at Leti, we're kind of in a similar – well, not a similar circumstance, but had to go east again. They played Rostov. Difficult first half. Very – not a very good pitch. Very inhospitable conditions. They won 1-0. And that – after that win, I thought, okay, they're going to win the group. Like, they're in – they're looking excellent. Another clean sheet. The similar performance is required here. But it's not to win the group. It's to just get back on track.
Right, and a lot's going to depend on what happens in that Chelsea-Roma game. It would make the group extremely scary if Roma were able to somehow win, but, you know, I don't have a huge amount of confidence in that happening, even though Chelsea are coming off a loss.
No, I mean, it's... and they don't have Morata, still.
True. So it could happen, and that would probably be the worst-case scenario, because then it's a three-way shootout.
I mean, after the Chelsea loss, you know, one could not be faulted for saying... you know, oh, you know, Atleti, you're screwed. This is a game that they had to have points in. They didn't have points in it. They're screwed. But on the other hand, if Chelsea beat Roma, which I think they're going to, and Atleti beat Karabag, you're back to even. You're both on 4 points. Atleti will probably have a goal difference advantage, or they'll be level on a goal difference. So you're right back to where you started.
True, and they play Karabag back-to-back, yeah, right?
Yeah, play them twice. So. Before that
they could
huge game
rack
with Roma.
Up some points and some goals in those two games, and that could leave them in a strong position. That's probably the best thing they have going for them, is those kind of two, you'd say, easy matches back-to-back.
Yeah, so for me, I'm actually hoping that Chelsea do beat Roma, because if Roma win, I think it just complicates things.
Yeah, I think so. I agree. I don't want Roma to win. I think that would be kind of bad for the group, because I don't want Roma to think that they have a chance, because that's when things start to get scary.
Yeah, Roma were kind of the wild card. They lost 1-0 to Napoli on Saturday. Napoli, just off topic, but Napoli are amazing. I love watching them. I think they're going to win Serie A this year.
I mean, you don't really love football if you don't love watching Napoli. They're such a good team.
they're awesome.
They play some great football.
They are awesome. But, yeah, for Karabag, let's take a look at some of the key players here. Their goalkeeper, Sehic, played very well against Roma. Tarik El-Younesi is another key player for them, a Norwegian international. Their goal was scored by Paulo Henrique against Roma. So, and honestly, I can't claim to know a whole lot about them, but they don't seem very good. They've scored once in two games. They've conceded eight. They have a big stadium. The Baku National Stadium seats, I think, close to 70,000. It's going to host the Europa League final next year. It was in the running to host the Champions League final next year, but instead the Wanda Metropolitano got it. Regardless of the names on the team sheet for either team, Atleti have to win. If Atleti don't win this game, then they're in deep trouble. Very deep trouble.
Yep. These two... excuse me. These two games back-to-back are really big matches to get points in, as well as goals. And speaking of goals, I can tell you, through some expert research, that the top scorer in the Azerbaijani league is Mahir Matadov, who
he may be Karabag.
The danger man for Karabag.
He plays for Karabag, yes he does.
Yes, may have to keep an eye on him.
Yeah, I think he's a wide forward or a winger, correct?
Yes, sure, let's go with that. Wikipedia says striker, but I don't trust them.
I think he's a winger, yeah. But whatever.
Yes, he's 20 years old. He's just a few months younger than me.
How many? Both prodigies. How many goals does he have in league play?
5 goals in 7 games.
Nice. All right, so
that's a pretty decent record.
You see someone to look for. He was played well against Roma, it looked like, but he got subbed off with about 10 minutes to go. Yeah, let's take a look at his stats against Roma here. We'll play the Colchonero chat, hold music.
yes, while we dig up some random stats on Karabag.
Yeah, Matadov, interesting. He completed 100% of his passes against Roma. 10 for 10. I mean, it's not
He's
a lot.
He's a danger man.
I mean, it's not a lot. He also made a lot of tackles. He made half a dozen tackles, a couple dribbles. Yeah, 20-year-old winger. So he's definitely one to look at as their danger man. Certainly one of the players to look at.
Yes, indeed. Well, we'll have to keep an eye on them because, you know, there are these teams. That's the kind of cool thing about James League. You run into random teams you've never really of and players you haven't heard of. So that's still a cool aspect of it,
yeah,
I think.
And it's kind of tough to prepare for, but based on their first two games, I'm not sure how much preparation, like, there's going to be preparation here, but, you know, I don't see, I can see this being a struggle for Atletico because they will make it a struggle for themselves, but it shouldn't be. I mean, Atletico have more talent than Karabag do. That's just a fact. The squad came out today. Juan Fran's not in it, so he's not going to be making the trip, which is just so weird. Juan Fran won't be there. Vieto's not going to be there, which I agree with, as you know. But everyone else is. So do you see... I see a start for Jimenez, either at center back or at right back. I also see a start for Tomas. I think he comes in for Gabby. Who else do you think comes in? Griezmann and Correa again?
Yeah, I kind of wonder if this will be the match where he chucks in Kevin Gamero, either as a sub or as a starter.
I wouldn't
really see the harm in playing him instead of Griezmann.
Like this
just
is the,
to give Griezmann some rest.
This is the match to do it in. The weakest team in the group. Gamero has barely played this season. If you're going to get him burned, this is the game to do it.
And also, I mean, to be honest, this is a team that he could probably easily score against. So, you know, if that could get his confidence going, then that would be ideal.
Yeah, definitely give him a confidence boost. Because after this, you have Celta away, and that could be tricky at Valladolid. You have the Copa del Rey next week. Then you have Villarreal. And Villarreal Atleti is always a battle.
Yeah, I mean, I think Gamero has a very real opportunity to get a start in against Karabag, as well as probably in the Copa del Rey as well. I'd think he'd be in contention for that.
Yeah, so potentially big news for Gamero. Potentially he starts. Augusto's also in the squad. Could maybe see him for the first time this season.
That would be really good. I think, you know, that Copa del Rey game would be another game where you could kind of get him back up to fifth.
Yep, either that game or this one on Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly.
Either way.
Maybe give him a few minutes off the bench against Karabag.
Give me a scoreline prediction.
I kind of agree with you. I think it's going to be a struggle because that's a long trip. I think it'll be a 2-1 struggle to Atletico.
2-1 to Atletico.
It's not going to be pleasant.
Yeah, it won't be pleasant for sure. Like, if you're expecting Atleti to win this game like 4-0 and get back on track, I think you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I don't think
I think Atleti will win. I think it'll be 1-0. I think it'll be like a second half winner. It's going to be a bad game to watch. But what's most important in this case is that Atletico get the win. Get themselves back into a position where they can qualify as one of the top two teams in the group, and you move on from there.
Yep, I think that's the best move. They have to win this game.
I think there's still a tinge of the unknown about Karabag because Atleti are the only team in the group that hasn't played them yet. And they did keep it a lot closer at home than they did away to Chelsea. So we'll see.
True. And it is a long way to go.
Yeah, so we'll see.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting one, but I think it's probably going to be a little bit painful. I don't think it's going to be necessarily the best game to watch, so make sure you drink in all the Man City Napoli the day before.
Yeah, that game's going to be wild. That's going to be so lit.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one, I think. I think that one's going to be two good footballing sides. So,
lastly, Karabag's manager, Gurban Gurbanov.
Oh, nice.
Classic.
What was that guy that was the coach of Wolfsburg whose name was like Wolf? I remember. Wolfsburg.
Yeah, look it up.
Yep. Play the search music.
Don't tell me his name was Wolfman.
It's Wolfgang Wolf.
That was it.
He managed.
Wolfgang Wolf.
Wolfgang Wolf. Oh, lovely. Lovely.
So Gurban Gurbanov is going to be the opposing manager.
I like it. Well, I don't know what he looks like. It'll be interesting. Maybe he's like the Azerbaijani Marcelo Bielsa, and he'll play like a 3-3-1-3 or something. And we just don't know. It could be anything.
Yeah, he played 4-2-3-1 against Roma.
All right, fair enough. No, he's a standard guy.
That's a little more standard, unfortunately.
Dang. No, like, non-symmetrical formations or anything like that. Dang, what a shame.
You can't have everything.
Oh, well, we'll take it.
What else you got?
I think that's about it from this week.
That's beautiful.
Is there any other news? No, don't think so.
Yeah. All right, we're done here. Those were the sultry tones of noted Azerbaijani expert Rob Walker.
Oh, I'm proud to spread the culture whenever possible. shout out to Azerbaijan. Love you guys. But don't do those illegal things they said you were doing when you were our shirt sponsor. Don't do that, that was.
You can follow Rob and his musings on the Land of Fire at rwalk03. That's rwalk03 on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter as well at jbberen, jbberen. Like Into the Calderon on Facebook, facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. You can also follow Into the Calderon on Twitter. I should have said that before. Let me do that again. You can also follow Into the Calderon on Twitter at Into the Calderon. Like ITC on Facebook, facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. Colchonero Chat, you can subscribe and listen to that podcast, well, this podcast, actually, on the podcasting platform of your choosing. Please leave a rating and a review on iTunes if you're subscribing there. Really helps boost the podcast's visibility, gets more eyes and ears on it. And finally, head over to patreon.com/colchonerochat if you are interested in supporting the show, if you're interested in contributing us to a... I can't talk.
It was going so well.
Hold on. If you're interested in supporting the show, if you're interested in making a small monthly contribution to help keep the show running and get some pretty cool benefits, including early access to select episodes of the program, exclusive images of the podcasting process, and so on and so forth. Patreon.com/ColchNeuroChat is the place to be if you want to contribute to the show. We'll be back on Thursday to talk about Atleti and Karabag and a lot more. Until then, adios.